This is Insurance Marketing with John Carroll, episode 20. Have I really done this 20 times? Let's rock.
Welcome to Insurance Marketing with John Carroll. Your resource for marketing ideas, sales tips, and business strategies that help agents like you survive and thrive. And now your host, John Carroll.
Welcome to episode number 20 of Insurance Marketing with John Carroll. I am not insurance marketing, but I am John Carroll. I'm the host of this show. And today I'm talking on this episode about something that I think is going to be kind of cool. Basically, I made a list of 9 important lessons that I learned when I used to be an insurance claim adjuster. I was a claim adjuster about 10 years ago. And it was really... my entry into the insurance industry. And I was pretty good at it after I figured out a few things. But I thought it'd be kind of an interesting episode to talk about some lessons that I learned in that side of the business and how they relate to sales. I just thought it might help you get a little more perspective on some things without doing a boring episode about insurance claims that isn't going to... directly affect you and help you sell more insurance. So that's what today's episode is about. It is about 9 sales lessons I learned as an insurance claim adjuster. So let me just back up here, and I want to explain the type of insurance claim adjuster I was. I was a casualty claim adjuster, and my job basically was our insured clients would hurt somebody with their car. And it was my job to pay that person. You know, you take care of the car and you figure out who caused the accident and that kind of stuff. But the real metric, the thing that I was judged on, was settling those claims, getting people to sign a release away from our client for some exchange of money for their pain and suffering and their lost time from work. And so that was my job. That was the key component of it, was close those claims so that everybody's happy, and I was in a state where people got paid for pain and suffering, so that was something that had to be put into consideration anytime anybody had any type of injury. Now, I remember when I first started at that job, one of the things that I remember that really struck me was that one of the metrics that I was being judged by was the percentage of claimants. Those are people who we injured. Our clients injure, the percentage of those people that would go and hire an attorney. And really the idea was they wanted as few people as possible to go out and hire an attorney. And, you know, I remember when I dug a little deeper, and I'm going to give a statistic here, but don't hold me to this, because I don't even know if it was true. It's just what somebody told me. But what somebody told me was that the average soft tissue insurance claim where there's no attorney involved is somewhere around $1,000. Now, you take the average soft tissue injury claim where there is an attorney involved, and the average claim is $10,000. So, you know, there's a lot of weird things, you know, that go on here. When people are more hurt, they're more likely to get an attorney. But for the most part, I looked at those two numbers, $1,000, $10,000, and I said to myself, well, if I can get half of the people, or, you know, if my people that I'm working with get attorneys half as often as everybody else, every single time I settle a claim that doesn't go to an attorney, I'm saving the company $9,000. And so there was a lot of different metrics that I was measured by, but I really embraced that one because I believed it to be the easiest way for me to make a significant impact on the bottom line. And so I want to talk to you today. This conversation is really around that idea of how was I so good at not getting people going and getting an attorney? And really, it's a sales job. The point that I wanted to make here before I even jump ahead is, you might say, well, were you any good at this? Well, in the state where I worked, where I handled claims, I would have roughly, the goal was to have less than 10% of your people going and hiring attorneys. And I pretty much hovered around 5 to 6% the entire time that I did that job. And the next closest person was really right around 9 or 10. So I was almost half. My people hired attorneys at a percentage of almost half of what these other people had. And at the time, I mean, I was 22 years old. I didn't know anything. I was pretty much a walking idiot working with people who'd been doing it for many years. And maybe that was an advantage to me. But anyways, I'm trying to get across the point that I was really good at this. And I'm going to share with you some of these lessons and tips and techniques that I used that enabled me to do that, because they really translate very well to the sales side of things. So the very first one that I want to talk about here is I decided that I had the best product. Now, let me explain this. Now, when you hear this story that the average claim with no attorney is $1,000, with an attorney it's $10,000, it's easy to think, well, then I guess probably all those people are getting gypped when they get the $1,000. But when you investigate a little bit further, what you find out is that the people who get attorneys, they don't really see much more money. They'll see a little bit more money at the end. But the whole scam with the attorneys is that the attorneys just send you to the doctor more, and the doctor knows they're going to get paid for as many. It's just kind of a big scam. But basically what you have is the person is just as injured, and they get treated and they get better. But in one case, they get better, they take care of it themselves, and they move on with their life. In the other case, there's all these people that are making a lot of money off of that person's injury, and they're actually setting up the whole situation to make people feel like they're not getting better. Because if I'm a doctor and I'm only going to get paid until this person gets better, I'm not going to tell them that they're getting better. I'm going to tell them that they're getting worse, or it's staying the same. And people will believe me because I'm a doctor, and that's just how people work. So really, one of the key things is that I decided that let me come back too, because that person who's getting $10,000 for their claim, they're not seeing a $9,000 difference. The attorney is taking 33% of that money. There's a whole lot more money in fees. I mean, if the person saw $1,000 before, they might see $2,000 with the attorney, but they had to go to doctor's visits for 6 months of their life, and they had to be told and surrounded by people who told them that they were still sick and still hurt, because those people had money to be made by selling that mindset. And so I decided from an early point that I had the best product. The best product was for people to settle their claim with me, not with an attorney. And that enabled everything else that I did to work the way that it did. And I think that it's the same on the side of selling insurance. You have to firmly believe that you have the best insurance. When you believe that, and let's face it, all the insurance carriers are pretty much the same. I mean, yeah, there's some differences, but it's your addition to the equation that you really have to believe that you're doing people a favor. If you don't have that fundamental belief, if you think that they would be better with a different insurance carrier, or if I thought that my claimants would be better off in life if they got an attorney, then I never would have been able to do everything else that I did. Whether it was true or not is beside the question. But my point is that I convinced myself that I had the best product and people wanted to work with me. And that's what enabled all the other things that I'm going to mention. It enabled them to work. So that was the first thing, is I decided that I had the best product and I moved forward with that. And I still believe that. You can probably tell it in my voice, the way I just described the two different situations. So number two, the second thing is that I would always try to relate to people using a local element. So part of the claim process is the person is describing the car accident that they have. And fortunately, I was in a place where a lot of the people who had car accidents were in the same city that I lived, which was Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so when somebody said, yeah, you know, I was pulling out of the Hobby Lobby on Las Lomas Boulevard, you know, I would inject and I'd say, oh, yeah, I know that. You know, I drive past that the other day because I was going to the Super Walmart over on Wyoming or whatever. I can't even remember any of that stuff because I don't live there anymore. But the key is that when people would describe things, I would really try to relate to the physical location. And the reason I did that is because it really helped me connect with the people. They didn't believe like they were talking to some dude in a call center 300 miles away. They knew that they were talking to somebody who could actually view the situation through their own eyes, because I had I related to it. And I really think that that helped build connections with the claimants that I worked with. So, you know, they would describe a scene and I would say, yeah, I know that intersection. I drive that every day. And you can do the same thing with your sales. When somebody tells you their address where they live, what you can do is you can say, oh, do you go to that, do you go to that Target near that over by that road, or do you ever eat at this restaurant, or any of these things that you can do? You know, you want to find cool, easy, flexible ways that you can assert the fact that you're local, because when you do that, you relate. You're now on the same side as that person. And in my case, they were less likely to go hire an attorney because they had somebody who could relate to them. In your case, they're more likely to buy from you than they will an 800 number because you can relate to them. So that was number two, is I would use that local knowledge that I had to my advantage. Number three is that I used to take notes about everything that they said. And it was kind of a funny story, because I remember, you know, people would tell me, I'd be talking to them and they would say, oh, you know, my daughter is going to a dance competition this weekend, so why don't we talk about this on Monday? You know, all right, cool, no problem. And I would put that in my notes. And I remember one time I was talking to my supervisor, and she's kind of like going through some of my files and stuff. And she says, you know, John, you know, sometimes, like in this example, you have some notes here about her daughter's dance recital. And, you know, the daughter wasn't even in the car. You know, we don't really need to keep this kind of information. And I told her, I said, no, you don't even get it. When I call her up on Monday and I ask her how the dance recital went for Julie, and, you know, and I have all this information at the top of my head, it's going to really connect me with that person, and they're going to be, you know, more likely to trust me and believe that I'm their partner, not an adversary. And, you know, so even though the folks in my business, in my line of business, kind of, they were more like, oh, you know, we don't have to get so personal with people, I completely disagreed. And I said, no, I'm going to be personal. And so I kept those notes. Anything that they said, I would write it down in those notes, and I used to use it as much as possible. People dug it, and it worked for me. So, you know, if you don't have a good way to take notes about your prospects and your clients, about the things that are not part of their application, then come up with a way, you know, or use that section of your quotes where you're allowed to put in free form notes. Use that so that you can, you know, have that information later on in the future when you're talking with that person. That was number three. Number four is that I used to set traps for the competition. You can do the same. So here's what I'm talking about. When I would first talk with somebody who'd been injured in a car accident, one of the conversations paths that I would always have with them is I would basically set things up so that they would be expecting all the phone calls and everything that they would get from the attorneys, and I would basically paint it in a bad way. So, I mean, you know, all this stuff, you know, you could tell me it's unethical, but it worked. So I don't know. You know, you do what you want. This is what I used to do. But I would tell them, you know, you've been injured in a car accident, and I just want to warn you that there are a number of attorneys out there who, you know, they have these backdoor ways of getting police reports, and you're going to start getting in the mail, you're going to start getting letters, you'll probably start getting phone calls from these different attorneys, and here are the different things that they're going to tell you, and here's why they're all not true. And I would actually go through that, and the funniest thing was that when I would call these people back a week later, they would tell you, you know what, John, you were totally right. I got a phone call from one of those scumbag guys, and he said exactly what you said, and I didn't believe any of it. And I am so glad that I have somebody like you on my side who's not trying to take advantage of my situation. And so basically what I did is, like I said before, I was setting traps. I was explaining what's going to happen so that when that happened, they were not fooled by the things that these personal injury attorneys would say to them. And you can do the same thing. When you're quoting with somebody, I you know, you can tell them, well, here's some of the things that other insurance companies do. Here's some of the things that they tell you that are not actually true. And the funny thing is, if you can just kind of plant that idea in their head and say, they're going to tell you X, Y, Z, and it's completely false or whatever, if that other agent or that other carrier does say X, Y, Z, the person is going to immediately just think it's BS, right? Because you set that trap for them. And, you know, so, I mean, it takes a little bit of a stretch, but there are plenty of ways of how you can set traps for the other agents who are going to be prospecting the same people that you have, especially if you're buying shared internet leads where you know for a fact that this person's going to be getting 5-6 different phone calls. So that's another thing I would do is I would set a trap so that when those attorneys reached out, the people already were expecting it and they actually were disgusted by it because of the way that I would paint that whole situation. That was number four. Number five is, I kind of actually said that. Basically, I would expose the competition. So while I would set the traps so that when they got those phone calls from the attorneys, they knew what was happening, but I would also expose and explain how the attorney situation worked. I would explain all the stuff that I told you before, where basically what they do is they send you to doctors who try to drag out your injury as long as possible so that the attorney can make more money. You still wind up seeing the same amount of money, or maybe even less, but you have to go through all this stuff. You know, basically, I just paint a really ugly picture. And so by the time these people did hear from an attorney, they were just like, leave me alone. I don't want to have anything to do with you. So those number four and number five were kind of the same. But number five, I would expose their tricks so that the person would already have a negative impression about those people. Now, number six, and this one is awesome. This is such an awesome idea, and it used to work so well. It's a little bit of a stretch for the sales thing, but it's still such a cool story. I remember when I was doing claim adjusting, one of the things I was thinking about doing is becoming a mediator. And a mediator is someone who, you know, tries to help two people who have a conflict, help them solve the problem without actually having to go to court and have lawsuits and all this other kind of stuff. And I remember there was a time I was thinking, I'd probably be real good at that. You know, maybe I should research it a little bit. And I was reading this book about mediation. And one of the things that they said that one of the most powerful elements of mediation is that it enables one party to say, I'm sorry, to the other party. And that little thing of getting the apology from the person who was wrong to the person who was right, that little tiny detail is worth millions of dollars. Because what happens when attorneys involved and two people have a conflict is immediately they can't talk to each other at all. So the opportunity for one party to just apologize disappears. And for that person who is owed an apology and never got it, the only way they can try to make up for that is to try to get as much money as possible. And that's a negative situation for everybody. So what I used to do, and this was my trick, and it was probably completely unethical, but when we had a car accident where our person was at fault for the other person, I would always tell that other person that I talked to my insured, and he wanted me to tell you that he was extremely sorry about what happened. Now, in actuality, that guy may have told me this other person was a complete jerk and they deserved it and they, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But I didn't care because my job was to settle that claim quickly and efficiently. And so what I found, though, is that you would have these people who were so raging. They were so angry. And what I would tell them, you know, the person who hit you is really, really sorry. And he actually asked me to contact you because the insurance companies have told him he cannot reach out to you. He says he would do this himself if he could, but instead he can't. So he asked me to relay this message to you. He is so sorry. And I would hear these people on the phone that would immediately go from they are so angry and so furious and they're going to sue us for everything we're worth. They would just calm right down. And now all of a sudden, they were just focused on, oh, really, the person is sorry? So let me remove my emotional attachment to this situation, and let's just focus on getting better, and we can move on. And so that was like a really cool cool trick that I did. Now, how can you do this? There's probably some good ways you can do this, but really it's kind of almost like a service thing. When something goes wrong and you don't have any control, or, you know, if you're ever in a situation where you can be that mediator person, that person in the middle, and when you know that one person was wrong and the other person deserves an apology, you can kind of say that they deserve it. So let's say that somebody has a billing problem and their policy gets canceled and it never should have. You know, after you get that problem fixed, you can tell them, hey, you know, I was talking with the representative at the company and they specifically told me that they were really, really sorry that that happened. And, you know, when you give that apology on behalf of other people, it's probably lying and you might hate it, but it used to work pretty well for me. So That was number six. Number seven is basically just showing people that you care about their situation. I used to kind of have this weird voice that I would use when I would talk to people during the first car accident conversation. And it sounded kind of like this. And they would tell me what happened. And I would say, oh, really? You know, and I basically would have this little, this like tone of voice that was like, I don't know if it was like my bedroom tone of voice or what it was, but I would really try as much as I could to be an actor and pretend that I really cared about their problems. And I really think that that's a huge element of sales is when people have these problems, you have to find a way to pretend like you care about them. And especially if you're ever talking with your clients about claims, that is the most important thing, is that they get the feeling that you care about them and you care about their situation and you too believe that it's unfair and they're having to, you know, go through all these extra things. Showing that care and concern. There is nothing that people hate more than when they're experiencing pain and they're talking to a claim adjuster who's just going through their job. Okay, tell me, how bad does it hurt? Okay, 0 to 10, how bad does it hurt? Okay, 10, got it. You know, like, that sucks. When you can really show people that you care, it's just really huge. So that was number seven, showing care and concern. Number eight is kind of a simple thing, but you can never leave people hanging. In the insurance claim business, when people get hanging, when they call and they leave you a message and you don't get back to them till the next day, that's 24 hours when they could just get so mad that they call up an attorney. Because an attorney, especially when he's trying to close his deal and acquire the client, he will call back. They'll have a 24-hour service that will answer those phone calls. So I used to have the rule that I always call people back the same day. Any kind of messages that they leave, I would call them back. It was important with that, but it's important with your own business. So if you leave people hanging, they will jump ship. It's just an important, maybe even more of a service thing than something else. Number nine is a little phrase that I call swallowing the frog. And basically it kind of comes, I don't know if this is like a Chinese proverb or where it comes from, but basically the idea is there's a story where when you wake up in the morning, if there's one thing you have to do that is as bad as swallowing a frog, you should wake up and you should swallow that frog first thing in the morning, because the rest of the day is going to go a lot better. The example of how this would go is in the insurance business, when let's say I had some bad news to deliver to somebody, like they really wanted their car to be totaled, and it turns out that the car was not totaled, and they're going to try to repair it, and you know that the person is going to be concerned about all this kind of stuff because there's all these reasons. There's a tendency to want to say, well, that's going to be a bad phone call, so I'm going to make that phone call last. That's going to be the last thing I do today. And then what happens is, you know, you put it off to the end, and then maybe it doesn't happen at the end of the day. It happens the next day, you know, and a lot of these problems, whether they're customer service or sales or any of these things, the sooner that you can address them, the sooner that they'll be fixed and everybody can move forward. So when you have that frog, swallow that frog. When you have a client that you know it's a bad situation, it's going to be a bad phone call, don't put it off. Do it now. Get it over with, because it's only going to get worse later on. That was number nine. Swallow the frog. Call that person that you don't want to call. Get that taken care of, because then you're going to free up your mind for everything else that you're doing. So, you know, and all these different things that I've talked about, these are just little kind of lessons that I learned over time. I never really sat down and formulated a theory and a process for all these things. But I think that if I had, I could have been far more successful. And I'm encouraging you to do the same with your sales process. Anyways, hopefully that was kind of interesting, a good little insight, kind of lessons that I learned over time. I never really sat down and formulated a theory and a process for all these things. But I think that if I had, I could have been far more successful. And I'm encouraging you to do the same with your sales process. But anyways, hopefully that was kind of interesting, a good little insight from what things were like on the other side that still had some lessons and some value that that you could move into what you're doing to help sell more business. That's all I got for today. So thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day. That's all I'm going to say. Take it easy. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Insurance.